with you again. I've got to thank Stuart for the introduction. I may have met you before, but I looked slightly different last time I was up here. And I also read in the paper that I'm not the only one who's sort of sprung a beard recently. Well, I'm disappointed to say yours is gone. It came and went, okay. Excellent. Well, it's really good to be with you again. Thank you so much for having us. It's great to be here. You may remember a couple of years ago, and I think it was nearly 2 years ago now, I think you were meeting in a community hall at the time. I came up and we had a look at Joshua and the Battle of Jericho, the whole taking of a city and the saving of Rahab. Well, it's very interesting because in preparing for this, I was led to Joshua again, but to a different part of the book of Joshua. You'll be pleased to know you're not getting the same message again. After 2 years, I can probably think of something else. But we're going to look at the book of Joshua, but it's a different part of the book of Joshua. So the book of Joshua is broadly divided into two halves. The first half is where we were last time. It's all full of battles, it's full of taking cities, the conquest of the land, it's got the saving of Rahab, it's got sin in Israel. All these big events and these big stories happen in the first half of the book of Joshua. And if you like, that's the Hollywood half. That's a bit you could make a film out of because they're really good stories, really easy to read. You teach the kids in Sunday school. I like to imagine it a bit like the film Troy, if you've seen the film Troy, sort of epic scale. It probably wasn't, but epic scale battles, that sort of thing. Well, today we're actually going to be in the second half of Joshua, which is not often looked at. It's quite often hard work because it's full of lots of names that are alien to us, lots of geography that doesn't make any sense to our head. But essentially, the first half deals with the conquest of the promised land, Israel coming in and taking the promised land. And the second half lists out how the land was divided amongst all the tribes, which is why you've got all these strange names and this strange geography, which doesn't make any sense to us, and I can't even pronounce half of them. The second half of Joshua starts like this. I'll just read these verses as a bit of an introduction. This is from chapter 13. And it starts, "Now Joshua was old and advanced in years. And the Lord said to him, 'You are old and advanced in years.'" Great, thanks. Absolutely, what an encouragement. "You are old and advanced in years, and there remains yet very much land to possess. So you can't stop yet." Then the next few verses lists out the land and the rulers which still have to be conquered by Israel. And I pick it up in verse 6. He says, "I myself will drive them out from before the people of Israel." So all these lists of lands which haven't yet been conquered, God saying, "I will drive them out in front of you. Only allot the land to Israel for an inheritance, as I have commanded you. Now, therefore, divide this land for an inheritance to the 9 tribes and the half tribe of Manasseh." So what God's saying is, yes, you've done a bit of conquest, but there's still lots more land to take, so you can't stop yet. But before you do, divide it now and give it to people. So this is amazing what faith this must take for Joshua to stand in front of the people and say, "Look, I know we haven't conquered Israel yet, but I'm going to divide it up and give it to you, even though it's not mine yet." And that's just a phenomenal faith to say, "God has said we are going to get this, so I'm going to divide it up and give it to you now." This is the God who calls into being things that don't exist yet. It calls it as it is not and makes it happen. And it's just an amazing faith. So in the light of that, in the light of we are looking at Joshua dividing up the land and giving it to the tribes, I'm going to spend some time this morning thinking about two different responses to this division. We're going to start by looking at Caleb. So if you want to turn to Joshua chapter 14, we're going to look at Caleb's response. But there's two very different responses in the following chapters to this division of the land and Joshua giving the people their inheritance. So, Joshua 14 from verse 6. "Then the people of Judah came to Joshua at Gilgal." So it's now Judah's turn to come to Joshua and learn which bit of the land is going to be theirs. "And Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, said to him, 'You know what the Lord said to Moses, the man of God, in Kadesh Barnea concerning you and me. I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land. And I brought him word again as it was in my heart. But my brothers who went up with me made the heart of the people melt. Yet I wholly followed the Lord my God. And Moses swore to me on that day, saying, surely the land on which your foot has trodden shall be an inheritance for you and your children forever, because you have wholly followed the Lord my God. And now, behold, the Lord has kept me alive, just as he said, these 45 years since the time that the Lord spoke this word to Moses, while Israel walked in the wilderness. And now, behold, I am this day 85 years old. I am still as strong today as I was in the day that Moses sent me. My strength now is as my strength was then, for war and for going and coming. So now give me this hill country of which the Lord spoke on that day, for you heard on that day how the Anakim were there with great fortified cities. It may be that the Lord will be with me, and I shall drive them out just as the Lord said. Then Joshua blessed him, and he gave Hebron to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, for an inheritance. Therefore Hebron became the inheritance of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, to this day, because he wholly followed the Lord God of Israel. Now the name of Hebron formerly was Kiriath Arba. Arba was the greatest man among the Anakim, and the land had rest from war. I just want to pray before we look at that a bit. Father, I do thank you for being with us today. I thank you for your word, which even in the difficult parts of scripture with alien words can just speak to us so clearly. And I pray that you would speak to us clearly now. I pray, Lord, that the words that I say would be your words, Father, they'd be anointed by your spirit. And just give us hearts to hear what you're saying to us today. In Jesus' name, amen. So chapter 14 illustrates how Caleb responded to the division of the inheritance. Now, you may remember Caleb and his story beforehand. It's referred to in the verses here. When Israel first made it to the borders of the promised land, some 45 years earlier, Moses sent spies out into the land, as you know, and Kadesh Barnea is where he sent the spies out from. So Kadesh Barnea is right in the south of Israel, right in the southern boundary of Israel, near the wilderness. And Caleb was one of the spies that Moses sent, and they went all the way through the land. They journeyed for 40 days up the hills, all the way almost to the top of Israel, and back again. After those 40 days, you may also remember, they returned with lots of fruit and food and a story of how fertile this promised land was, which in comparison to the manna they'd been eating since the journey since Egypt, must have been amazing. Must have been like a banquet waiting them. But they also came with another message, which was the land is full of these Anakim, which are also mentioned in chapter 14 there. And these are giants. These are huge people, much bigger than the Israelites. They've got armor, and they're in fortified cities. And Israel is just a wandering nation with lots of livestock, and they've just shortly come from captivity in Egypt. Caleb's response at that time was, come on, God is with us. We can drive out these people from these cities because God has said this will be our inheritance. All the other spies who went with him said, no, they're too big for us. We cannot take them. And their faith quavered, and they managed to convince the rest of Israel, we can't go in and take the land. As a result, Israel then wandered the wilderness for 40 years. And the punishment for the lack of faith of that generation was that they would all die out. That generation would not see the promised land, and only the next generation would see the promised land because of their lack of faith. And the one exception to that, or two, is Joshua and Caleb. So Caleb had faith the first time they hit the boundary of the promised land and was told, as a result, you will see it. But he had to wait. Had to wait a long time. He had to wait with Israel while they went round in circles in their wilderness for 40 years. He had to wait while an entire generation died out. His generation. His own flesh and blood. People his age, if you like. He had to wait while they died out in order to come to the boundary of the promised land again. If I were him, I'd probably been tempted to knock some of them off, actually, to make it a bit quicker, but there we go. And finally, they come to the promised land, and Caleb's still there. Then they go into the land, they take Jericho, which we looked at last time, They move on. They take other cities. There's a few more episodes that they have to deal with. And that takes another 5 years. So he's waited 40 years in the desert, and now he's helped Joshua conquer the land for another 5 years. So 45 years he's waited until this point in Joshua 14 to see the land, which he had faith. And he said, yes, we can take it. And through it all, he wholeheartedly followed the Lord. It says there in Joshua 14, he wholeheartedly followed the Lord. His faith was as strong at the end of those 45 years as it was at the beginning. And that's what amazes me about this chapter. After waiting 45 years, the time has come for the dividing of the land, and Caleb says, right, now is the time for me to claim my inheritance. And his response is phenomenal. So, I don't know about you, but if I had been waiting 45 years for something I knew was going to be mine, and I knew that Joshua was dividing up the land, I'd say, give me the land, I want it now, I want rest. That's not quite what Caleb says, it's not quite. You see, Caleb chooses the hard way. He says, look, I know I'm 85, but my strength is as strong now for war as it was 45 years ago when I was strong then for war. I still believe, even though I'm 85, that I can take these fortified cities. I can take these really tall giants with all their armor. We can do it because God is with us. He doesn't say, give me my inheritance so I can retire. I can eat off the milk and honey in the land and just put my feet up for a bit, knowing that my faith was rewarded. No, he had to wait 45 years, and then he still had a job to do. And he said, yes, I'm going to do it. I'm going to claim that land which God promised for me, with all of the fortified cities and all of the giants. And I just think that's amazing. And he does. He does take the land. We can read in the next chapter that he drives out the three sons of Anak. So these three giants of leaders. He drives out of the city and he takes the city, settles in the city and moves on to the next city and takes the next city. And he does it. And Joshua's response to Caleb's faith, he must have been hugely encouraged by this. You see, the Israelite nation are known for their grumbling and their complaining. And Joshua and Moses both got very used to that. But here is a man who's 85, who's encouraging him. And he rewards his faith by giving him Hebron. Now, Hebron is a significant city for the people of Israel. In Abraham's life, if you go back to Genesis 13, when Abraham and Lot go their separate ways to walk the land, and Lot chooses the fertile valleys, Abraham goes to the hill country. And God says to Abraham, wherever you go, this land will belong to your descendants, which is what we're looking at now. All this land I have given to you. And the place where Abraham stops to build an altar is Hebron. And so he stops in Hebron, he builds an altar to the Lord. And so this is a significant place in the history of this people, and Joshua gives it to Caleb. Hebron is named, Kiriath Arba, as its original name was named after the greatest leader of the Anakim, the greatest of these giants. So it's a significant city for them as well. After he takes it, it becomes a city of refuge. It becomes one of the cities of the Levites. And to this day, it is known as the city of the patriarchs because it is where Sarah, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are all buried, traditionally, in the cave that Abraham bought. So this is a significant city that Joshua gives to Caleb because he was such an encouragement to Joshua. And so that's one response you could have to the inheritance being divided and given to you. You could say, yes, God is with me. I am going to take it. I know there is work to be done, but we can do it because God is with me. The second response is that of the tribe of Manasseh. So if you flip forward to chapter 17 of Joshua, we'll look at their response. And have a think about how this is slightly different to Caleb's response. Now, we're going to read from verse 12 of chapter 17. To give you a bit of background, so far, Joshua has outlined all of the cities which have been given to the tribe of Manasseh, and all of the boundaries and the land which is going to be theirs. But it hasn't gone smoothly for Manasseh. And this is what it says from verse 12. Yet the people of Manasseh could not take possession of those cities. But the Canaanites persisted in dwelling in that land. Now, when the people of Israel grew strong, they put the Canaanites to forced labor, but they did not utterly drive them out. Then the people of Joseph spoke to Joshua, saying, "Why have you given me but one lot and one portion as an inheritance, although I am a numerous people, since all among the Lord has blessed me?" And Joshua said to them, "If you are a numerous people, go up by yourselves to the forest, and there clear ground for yourselves in the land of the Perizzites and the Rephaim, since the hill country of Ephraim is too narrow for you." The people of Joseph said, "The hill country is not enough for us, yet all the Canaanites who dwell in the plain have chariots of iron, both those in Beth Shean and its villages, and those in the valley of Jezreel." Then Joshua said to the house of Joseph, to Ephraim and Manasseh, "You are a numerous people and have great power. You shall not have one allotment only, but the hill country shall be yours. For though it is a forest, you shall clear it and possess it to its farthest borders. For you shall drive out the Canaanites, though they have chariots of iron, and though they are strong." So for the tribe of Manasseh, it hasn't been easy. They've been given an inheritance. They've been trying to drive the Canaanites out of the cities, but they've got chariots. They're in the plains, which is a great place to have a chariot. They've got fortified cities, and they just can't drive them out. They just can't drive them out of the cities, which are meant to belong to Manasseh. So they go to Joshua and say, "We're a big tribe. There's two of us, really. We're both sons of Joseph, Ephraim and Manasseh. There's lots of people. We need more land. Give us some more land, because we can't settle in the valley." And I think Joshua is quite gracious to them. He doesn't say, "Go away, you complaining children, just get on with it." He says, "Okay, you can have the hill country as well." But that's not the right answer for Manasseh either, because the hill country is difficult, because the hill country is full of forests. You can't build a settlement in a place that's full of forests. So it's going to take a lot of effort. So they say, "Well, that's all well and good, but that's still not enough space. Because look at all the Canaanites, look at all the chariots in the plains. We can't drive them out. We need more space. We can't all of us fit in this hill country." But Joshua stops at that point and says, "No, you are a numerous people. You have great power. You shall not have one allotment only, but the hill country shall be yours. For though it is a forest, you shall clear it and possess it to its farthest borders, for you shall drive out the Canaanites." And so I think what's going on here is Manasseh have found that it's hard work to take the land. It's really hard work. And they're almost looking for an easy way out. They're saying, "Oh, come on, Joshua, we've been trying, but we just can't do it. Can you just give us the easy way out?" And Joshua is gracious. There is grace here. They do get more land. But ultimately, they still have to clear it themselves, and they still have to turf out these Canaanites, which ultimately they never fully do. And so in these two responses, we see two different ways to taking the land. Yes, this has been promised to them. Yes, this is their inheritance, but it's going to take work. Caleb's response is, "Yes, although I am 85, God is with me. I can take these cities." Manasseh's response is, "It's hard work. I want the easy way out. Can we just have a different bit of land, please?" And the two responses are in stark contrast to each other. So the obvious challenge to us is, what is our response? And there's two different ways you can think about it. First of all, personally, to individuals in this room, if you carry promises yourself, which you may have carried for many years, or you may be on the edge of now, what's your faith level like for those promises? Because when it comes, or when the inheritance is carved out to you, it's probably still going to be hard work. So are you ready for that? Are you ready to say, "Yes, God is with me. I don't quite know how it's going to happen, but yes, we can take this and we can do this." Or are you sitting back and thinking, "Do you know what? My inheritance is going to be given to me one day. And when my inheritance is given to me, I'm just going to sit back and I'm going to retire. I'm going to go and play bridge. I'm going to go and put my feet up for a bit, maybe go and hang out with some old fogies." What's your attitude to that? Because when that inheritance comes, it might well be hard work. So what's your faith level like? Similarly, I mean, maybe you're not thinking of an individual promise that's made to you. But as Christians, we have a great inheritance in heaven. We have a glorious portion with Christ, where we're going to be with him forever on this earth, the new earth, with no pain, and we're going to have responsibility, and we're just going to live with him forever, and it's going to be phenomenal. And that is not very far away. this life is just, it is just a vapor. It's going to happen very soon. So are you ready to inherit that? Are you ready to receive that in this life? In the light of that, are you just sitting back and cruising and thinking, ah, well, it's all going to be given to me one day, so I don't need to do anything now? Or are you faithfully, wholeheartedly serving the Lord now, like Caleb did? And the reason why he saw the promised land was because he wholeheartedly served the Lord those 45 years while he waited. So that's, as an individual, what is your response to the promises of God and the inheritance you've got? But also, as a church, as Valley's Family Church here in Bryn Mawr, you yourself carry promises and carry a calling. You have a new church building, which I just think is phenomenal. And I remember when Stuart came along to the prayer and fasting for the Catalyst Network, and he stood up at the front and just very quickly shared the story of how you got this church at such a bargain price, which I just think is phenomenal. And many people in the room were just like, wow, how did that happen? How did you get that so cheap? How can we do that? And it was just an amazing story. But when you take that story out of context and you tell it to other people, you realize how amazing it is. Never forget that. Never forget this amazing gift that's been given to you as a church, that God has given to you. And God never gives gifts without purpose. So he's giving this to you. And I think my challenge is that, yeah, there's still hard work to be done. From what I hear, it needs to be cleared out. It needs to be renovated. It's going to cost time and effort and money to do it. It's going to be hard work. You can't just sit back and say, oh, look, we got a church. Brilliant, let's move in. It's hard work to take hold of the inheritance that God has given you. So I guess my encouragement is, yes, have faith. God is with you. God has given this for a purpose, and you can do it. In the meantime, as well as just a building, there's a town to be won. Because you see, Caleb, when he went to Hebron, he didn't just turf out the riffraff. He didn't just kick out the Anakim, and that was it. No, he settled there, and this was to be his inheritance for a long time. Well, to this day, as it says in Joshua. So he didn't just clear it out and move on. And in the same way with your church building, you're not just going to renovate it and that's it. No, you're renovating it to settle in it and to fill it. And that work starts now as well. So as you go out into your workplaces and into your, wherever it is you're represented, your families, and wherever you meet people in the town, you're an ambassador for Jesus' church. And there's a building that's being renovated, ready for souls. Souls need to fill that building. So I guess my encouragement again is, come on, you can do it. There's a town to be taken so that you can settle here as an inheritance forever, not just renovate a building, and that's it. It's like building a barn before the harvest. That's the sort of faith that we're talking about, because you might think there's not enough people here to fill that building now. There's not enough money here to renovate that building now. But it's about building the barn now, ready for the harvest, in preparation for the people that are going to come. I think the other thing that's significant to know about Caleb and Hebron is there's a very little phrase at the end of that passage in chapter 14. After Hebron is given to Caleb, there's a significant phrase, and the land had rest from war. So there's been an awful lot of battling and strife over the years, and when this inheritance is fulfilled in Caleb, it doesn't just impact him, it impacts the land. And at that point, the land has rest because something of God's purposes has been fulfilled. And maybe that's what it's like for you guys here in Bryn Mawr. Maybe that once this thing is fulfilled, there'll be a period of rest. I don't know. Maybe I know it'll be significant for Bryn Mawr, not just for you guys. It's not just a home for you. This is significant for the town and the valleys. And so I wanted to challenge you. I know that we raced through the chapters there, but I really thought that Caleb and Hebron had a direct correlation to what you're building here. And I hope that encourages you. That's all well and good. But Caleb was a great man of faith, and I am not. And I don't often feel like, come on, I can take the giants because I'm tired and I've been in the desert for 45 years and it's hard work and I've got kids that just take a lot of effort and everything else. Life is hard, and we don't often feel like that. So I didn't want to just come here and say, come on, you can do it, go on, get your faith up, because I know that life's not like that. We've had an interesting week. It's been a very varied week. Last weekend, my cousin got married in Cardiff, so that was great. We went to a wedding in the Welsh College of Music and Drama, which was a really nice building. Then on Monday night, I had an interview on Skype for a job in New Zealand. More about that later. And then on Tuesday, so the day after, we had to drive all the way down to Kent to go to a family funeral. And it was pretty much with the same family that we were with on the Saturday for the wedding. It was very strange. The funeral itself was for a lovely lady. It was for my great aunt, who, she was a lovely lady. She was in her 60s. She always had a smile. She was a lot of fun. But she also had her troubles, I think it's fair to say. And she kept herself to herself when it came to her faith. But one thing that I never knew came to light during the funeral, and that was she always had one verse that encouraged her to have faith, to have belief. And that was in John 14, where he says, "In my Father's house there are many rooms." And it was just that one verse. And I didn't really know if she had faith or not, and that's the first that I'd heard of that. And in that moment, I was just reminded of the mustard seed of faith that Jesus talks about. Is that when the kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed. And when you plant that mustard seed in the ground, it grows into a massive tree, and all the birds come and nest in it. And that's like the kingdom. That's like the kingdom that God is building. It's just Jesus himself, with such humble beginnings and with such a humble death, sowed his body, and it's grown into this massive kingdom. And in eternity, it's just going to be glorious and last forever. And in the same way, there's the mustard seed of faith, where Jesus says, if you just have a mustard seed of faith, you can move trees or you can move mountains, which is a phenomenal picture. And all you need is that tiny little mustard seed. So for my great aunt, all she needs is a tiny little mustard seed of faith. And if it truly connects her to Jesus, then she will inherit this glorious inheritance along with the rest of us, which is just fantastic. And so all you need when you're looking at Bryn Mawr, when you're looking at the new church building, maybe you don't feel all on fire for it. Maybe you just feel, oh, it's just so much effort. But all you need is a little mustard seed of faith to connect you to Jesus. And that connects you with all the power that created the universe. And that's all that you need to see it done. That's all that you need to wholeheartedly follow God. And God can bless that. So my encouragement is don't sit back. It's to act. It's to get involved. Patiently waiting for promises is an active waiting. It's not a sitting back waiting to retire. It's actively spending time in the Word. It's praying. It's looking for what God is doing and putting your hand to what God has placed in front of you while you wait. Caleb wouldn't have taken the city if he didn't act. He never would have inherited if he hadn't gone up there and tried to take it off these giants. Similarly, interestingly enough, the nation of Israel wouldn't have existed if Abraham hadn't acted. Have you ever thought about that? Abraham had a promise that he would have children, and he thought, well, I'm 100 years old. Come on then, God, where's my children? Now, he couldn't really bet on a virgin birth, I don't think. So Abraham had to act on that promise, you know what I mean? If he hadn't have acted on that promise, then the nation of Israel never would have existed. So even as 100 years old, he had to do something to make this promise happen. And that's very much like what you guys are looking at with the church. Is you've got this church and there's work to be done, but you need to act to make it happen because God's not going to do it on his own. I read this quote from John Piper this week. He said, God steers moving ships. And if you think about a ship just in a harbour, it could be a dinghy or it could be a super tanker. If it's still, you can't turn it because any means for turning a ship round. Once it's moving, then it's got this rudder at the back. And as you turn the rudder, you can direct it. And I guess the challenge is the same, is that in our faith and in our walk of life, are we just stationary, in which case God can't direct us anywhere, can't use us, or are we putting our hand to what's in front of us, wholeheartedly serving the Lord with what we've got at the moment, and then he can direct us, and then he can use us, then he can steer us. We have to actively be getting involved in order for God to direct us like that. So my encouragement is to be in the Word, be in prayer, be faithful to the ministry that is in front of you. You should know that you're not alone. You have each other. Robina stands with you in this Catalyst network. You have a whole family of other churches who are ready to stand with you. And actually, I don't know if you're going, but I'd encourage you to go to the Catalyst Festival at the end of May. You are? Because that's just going to be a great opportunity to meet other people, to share your story. And it just builds faith and it just encourages you. And in this Catalyst network, it might be confusing as to what New Frontiers is, who are all these people leading it. I don't quite understand how I fit in, to be honest. But it's a bunch of people, it's a family of churches willing to get alongside you and to encourage you, and it'll do you good. So let me encourage you. God's word is powerful and effective, and God calls into being things that are not. If he began a good work in you, he will carry it on to completion at the day of Christ Jesus. And the one who calls you to it is faithful, and he will surely do it. So that's just my very brief challenge for today. I think, if it's okay with you, I'd like to share a bit about New Zealand. Is that okay? I wanted to share a bit about what we've been going through in the past year and a bit. I want to share it so that it encourages you, and not to say we're great, because I don't think we are, and it might not happen. I mean, we're not there yet. Our journey started last March, so March 2012. I was praying a lot about my own personal calling, what I should be involved in, just feeling really down, like I was in the wrong place and stuck. And God said, okay, well, God said to me when I was praying, I'm preparing you for a move. I thought was great, I need a change. I said, okay, go on then, give me a laugh. Where are we moving to? And he said, New Zealand. I was like, okay. I've always been a UK person. I don't do other cultures. It's hard enough to cross the border into Wales, let alone, but actually I reckon if I've made that change, I can do anything. I've always been a UK person. I don't do cultures. So I guess it's a good thing that it's probably the most English culture outside of England. But yeah, so we had a calling to New Zealand, specifically to Christchurch in the South Island, which obviously suffered with an earthquake recently, and they're only really now beginning to look at rebuilding it. Now at the time, that was just me. That's just what God told me, and I was like, well, I mean, I mentioned it to Ginger, and we just thought, yeah, we'll see what happens. God's got to do it if it's going to happen. The thing about my job is I work in finance. All the finance jobs are all in Auckland and Wellington on the North Island. And I felt quite strongly that it's Christchurch in the South Island, and there's just nothing there. Anyway, it was confirmed through a number of instances. One that's come to mind just now, actually, is I was driving to work one day. I might not have even told you this one. I was driving to work one day, and yeah, and there was a car in front of me in the queue, and I was just, you know, you switch off when you're driving to work in the queue. And I suddenly looked at it, and it was a Toyota Aygo. And on the back of it, it had a great big sticker which said "Go." Now, this is significant to me because for most of my life, I've been waiting for God to say "Go," and I've said that to him a few times. Like, I've got these promises you've got over my life. I don't really know how it's going to happen, and I'm weak. I can't really see how you can use me to do it. But I just want you to tell me to go, so I can start, so I can get going and stop waiting. So that was quite significant. So the car had a big sticker with "Go" on the back of it. And the number plate was CF02, I think, NZA. So it was "Go, Cardiff to New Zealand." Have I told you that one before? No, I don't think so. But the reason I probably haven't told you that before is probably you were on board with all of this. Anyway, so after that, it all really kicked off in November, which is when I randomly opened an email in my work inbox. I signed up for... 5 years ago, when I started working for Lloyd's, where I work now, I signed up for this job email from an accountancy company, and they're so boring, and I don't think I've ever opened it. It comes to me probably two or three times a week in the last 5 years, and I've never opened it. I just delete it when it comes in. I opened this one because it had a funny subject. The email subject was something like "Jobs available in the Tate Modern Gallery and the Falkland Islands Government," which amused me, so I opened it. Halfway down, it says "finance jobs in Christchurch." Okay, so through a course of that, I got in touch with various people. I eventually, I clicked on the link. I eventually got in touch with the recruitment consultant, and we just started looking into it and seeing what was happening. And the latest thing is that on Monday night, as I said, I had a job interview on Skype, which is a very bizarre experience because there was a big delay on the video. So like I would say a joke to try and lighten the mood, and then the two of them would just be staring back at me like this. And then they'd laugh, like, whew, I got away with it. I got a job interview, and then I've got a follow-up interview this week. So the bottom line is, at the end of the week, I might be offered a job in New Zealand, which is just crazy. I might not. It might not happen, but that's where we are now. And I guess it never would have happened if I hadn't have opened that email. It never would have happened if I hadn't have clicked on the link, if I'd have talked to the recruitment consultant. My application of what we've been talking about today is New Zealand. You can't find out if it's going to happen unless you try. God can't direct you to where he wants you to go unless you click on the link or unless you speak to the recruitment consultants or do the job interview. You've got to act in order to inherit the promises. Otherwise, you're just going to be sat still. You're going to be that boat in the harbor that's not moving anywhere. So that's my challenge. And I say that as an encouragement, not because I'm great, because I'm not, and I couldn't have done any of that stuff. And as I said, we might not even get there. I think the only other thing I wanted to say is if you would like prayer because your faith is low, or if you'd like prayer because we just want to pray over your promises and your calling on your life again, that would be great. I would love to do that. I'm sure Stuart would. Please come up afterwards. But I'd also really like to sing, what's it called? Everyone Needs Compassion Again. Just because that song, in terms of, talks about God can move mountains, but also he accepts me of my weaknesses and who I am and everything about it. Just, there's grace there as well. God knows that my faith fails at times. And a month ago, I remember sitting in a Sunday service almost crying, because my faith, even for the New Zealand stuff, was just at an all-time low. I was just like, God, you can't use me. You can't. There's nothing here for me. It's too hard to go over there. It's just nothing happening. And there's grace even when your faith is low. So I'd really like to sing that. Is that okay?